The story of the march to global empire did indeed appear to be leaking out. Not the details, not the fact that it was a tragic story of debt, deception, enslavement, exploitation, and the most blatant grab in history for the hearts, minds, souls, and resources of people around the world. Nothing in these articles hinted that the story of Iraq in 2003 was the continuation of a shameful story. Nor did they disclose that this story, as old as empire, has now taken on new and terrifying dimensions, both because of its magnitude during this time of globalization, and because of the subtlety with which it is executed. Despite its shortfalls, however, the story did appear to be leaking out, almost reluctantly. The idea of the reluctant story leaking out hit very close to home. It reminded me of my own personal story, and of the many years I had postponed telling it. I had known for a very long time that I had a confession to make. Still, I postponed making it. Thinking back, I see that my doubts, the whisperings of guilt, were there from the beginning. They had started in Claudine's apartment, even before I made the commitment to go to Indonesia on that first trip, and they had haunted me almost incessantly all these years. I also knew that had the doubts, the pain, and the guilt not constantly nagged me, I would never have gotten out. Like so many others, I would have been stuck. I would not have stood on a beach in the Virgin Islands and decided to quit Maine. Yet, I was still deferring, just as we as a culture continue to defer. These headlines seem to hint at the alliance between big corporations, international banks, and governments. But like my main resume, the stories barely touched the surface. It was a gloss. The real story had little to do with the fact that the major engineering and construction firms were once again receiving billions of dollars to develop a country in our image, among a people who, in all likelihood, had no desire to reflect that image. Or that an elite band of men was repeating an age-old ritual of abusing the privileges of their high government positions. That picture is just too simple. It implies that all we need to do, if we decide to right the wrongs of the system, is to throw these men out. It feeds into the conspiracy theories, and thereby provides a convenient excuse to turn on the TV and forget about it all, comfortable in our third-grade view of history, which runs, "They will take care of it. The ship of state is seaworthy and will get nudged back on course. We may have to wait for the next election, but all will turn out for the best." The real story of modern empire, of the corporatocracy that exploits desperate people and is executing history's most brutal, selfish, and ultimately self-destructive resource grab, has little to do with what was exposed in the newspapers that morning, and has everything to do with us. And that, of course, explains why we have such difficulty listening to the real story. We prefer to believe the myth that thousands of years of human social evolution has finally perfected the ideal economic system, rather than to face the fact that we have merely bought into a false concept and accepted it as gospel. We have convinced ourselves that all economic growth benefits humankind, and that the greater the growth, the more widespread the benefits. Finally, we have persuaded one another that the corollary to this concept is valid and morally just, that people who excel at stoking the fires of economic growth should be exalted and rewarded, while those born at the fringes are available for exploitation.